B-Pod Studios.
They get you going. They get you going every day.
He looks worse than me. Way worse than me.
Toucher and Rich.
And I don't look good.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Fred is a massive dick. Rich is a nerd loser. Rest in peace to Wallach's gap teeth. We miss them. Fred is a dick. Fred is a dick. Fred's a dick. Joe Murray likes him thick. Fred's a dick. Joe Murray likes him thick. Fred is a dick. Fred is a dick. Fred's a dick. Joe Murray likes him thick. Fred's a dick. One day Nick felt sick, felt the rumble in his belly. His girlfriend found him with poop in his pants. Young Nicholas pooped his pants. Young Nicholas pooped his girlfriend, found him with poop in his pants. Young Nicholas pooped his pants. Young Nicholas pooped Mark Tremelli.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And young Nicholas, our own young Nicholas, who started here so young, finally got married. He got hitched after much discussion at his non-destination wedding. It was a mere, how long did it take you to get back, John?
Almost 4 hours.
Yeah, it was only 4 hours away. Not a destination wedding.
That, by the way, is a fact that was brought up several times in toasts and in the actual, I think, wedding itself.
Good. Yeah.
Somebody said, by the way, this is not a destination wedding. And everyone started laughing.
Yeah. Good. By the way, in case you want to know where it is, we all actually had to go. You drive north, you go to Portland, and then it's another hour on back roads. After you get past Portland. Portland, Maine, another hour up the coast.
Yeah, like in the weird part of Maine.
It's in the islands. It's in like
where there's like weird geography.
Yeah. Where you're taking bridge after bridge after bridge to get
fair.
To different islands over there.
I feel very bad. I didn't go. I couldn't go. And I'd made fun of it. And then I stopped making fun of where the wedding was because when I found out I couldn't go. But I'd already accumulated all that making fun of it.
Right.
So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing, gentlemen, that it was a fantastic affair.
It was unbelievable. And I will say this. First of all, you know, we were joking about, you know, Nick, like, you know, being cheap. And there was no expense spared on this wedding. Yeah, no, he did not. He did not.
No, he didn't have to pay for it. I didn't doubt that his fiance's family would get it together.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to have it somewhat together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, compared to that Gemelli clan. Yeah, you were the half of the family that seems to have it together had the wedding.
Yeah.
So, if it was up to Nick, come on.
So I got there on Friday night, and Wallach showed up the next day. But when I got there Friday, Mike Lockhart was there as well, and the bride and groom had this reception, you know, where you could hang out, and it was basically open bar, and it was awesome, because this hotel's got this kind of, like, old oaky, you know, different thing with a big patio out front, and me and Mike Lockhart, and we were sitting there drinking, and Nick had come up, and he was, you know, feeling it, he was in a good mood, you know, he had obviously had a lot to drink and having a great time with his friends and family, and he goes and disappears, and Mike can back me up on this, about maybe 20-30 minutes later, Mike, all of a sudden, Nick comes emerging from the darkness. I don't know where he was. I don't know if it was like from the bushes or whatever. And he didn't know where he was. He walked up to us like,
"Wow,
Nick, do you want to say something?" He just walked up and kind of stared at us and went, "I'm going to go to bed now."
Oh, Nick, it sounds like he took...
I missed that.
Damn it. He took like a bit of an edible.
It was like a...
That maybe hit a little hard.
Yeah, he said it was because he smoked a Juul.
A what?
A Juul. Like a vaporizer?
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he must have sucked that thing like a milkshake. Yeah. I mean, he
considering there's like 8-year-olds that smoked that. Yeah. I doubt that's right. The case.
No, I just, he goes, all of a sudden out of nowhere, and like, just what, 20 minutes earlier he was talking to us, and yeah. He was in a good mood, and he was...
An edible kicked in. Yeah. Well, an edible...
And then he zombied away.
The edibles now... I know people who've taken edibles, and it's put them out of commission for 36 hours, so yeah.
He walked up to us, and it was just out of the darkness, all by himself, and he's looking in his suit and everything, and he comes and he walks, he looks at Mike, and I goes, I'm going to go to bed now. Yeah, he just wandered right back into the darkness.
His legs couldn't bend anymore, they were just stick straight.
Yeah, young Nicholas had taken an edible that had kicked in. You never know. Yeah. You never know how much THC is in those things.
I guess. And maybe he didn't think one was enough and popped another one, and they all went kablammy at the same time.
They're very powerful now.
Yeah, all right. They are. And the whole way up, like all you guys saw it. I mean, there's cannabis stores all over, man. Yep. I mean, just littered everywhere.
That's what happened. I mean, that's what happened.
Oh, sure. I mean, but it was so funny. I mean, within 20 minutes, he went from fun Nick to just catatonic Nick.
Yeah.
And so he went to bed, and everyone else stayed out, you know, a little bit later after that. But the next day, and by the way, there was a monsoon overnight. I mean, we woke up at like 10 in the morning. I mean, it was flooding everywhere. I'm like, this thing's going to be ruined. And all of a sudden, right about an hour before the wedding itself, sky was beautiful.
It was
absolutely
of God.
Perfect.
It was wild because when we were driving up, the streets were soaked and it was overcast. I'm like, we just missed it. And I felt really bad for her, especially because your bride, you wake up and you see a downpour like that 3 hours before your wedding.
Oh, yeah.
It's supposed to be outside.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So we all, you know, get there. And it was awesome because we were sitting down and you slowly get to see everybody roll in. Now, I had just run into Wallach a couple minutes earlier, so I had already seen him.
Yeah.
But then I got to see, you know, the Bankroll Boys. They came rolling in. They clean up nicely. And then came Bird. And Bird is wearing this dark sunglasses and a big trench coat. And looks like he's about to murder somebody. Like, he looks like a hitman for the mob when he showed up.
It looks like he doesn't know how to dress for a wedding.
I mean,
maybe. He was Secret Service came rolling in.
Yeah. Seriously, he had the shades on and the top coat there, and you're like, oh, man.
Yeah. what did you wear to the wedding? Oh, a trench coat.
Yeah.
I mean, of course. I mean,
it wasn't like a freezing day either.
I don't care if it's a freezing day, John. You don't walk around a wedding with a trench coat on. But that's in Everett, that's the height of sophistication.
That's true.
Yeah, that's when you know you've made it.
He left the pipe at home.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you going to wear? Oh, I'm going to wear my nicest trench coat.
That was great.
It's a duster. I'm going to wear my duster. Yeah. I'm a High Plains drifter. I'm going to wear my duster.
So Nick did very well. They wrote their own vows.
I heard Nick was crying like a puss.
he did get choked up, and you know, because there was a lot of talk about him dying. It was kind of the theme. It was like, you know, you died, and I brought you
this
back to life.
This is during the...
Yes. Oh, yeah.
During the ceremony.
Did they mention feces?
No.
Matter of fact, it was, I love you, despite being covered in feces.
Or did she say...
in the vows.
Did she say, finally, our community can be recognized in front of a group of people.
Our community.
We are fecophiliacs. I wanted you all to know.
But it was great. So, I mean, the vows were awesome. I mean, Nick did get choked up, but what, you know, who cares?
This is right. I'm
it was
kidding,
great.
Obviously.
And then afterwards, we all go over to where the reception is. And so at my table, it's me, it's Wallach, it's Mike Lockhart, and it's the guy who runs Boston Calling. And then at the other table that's next, like right next to us, is
the guys
Joe Murray.
The guys, he's not friends.
It's Joe Murray, it's Bird, and it's Dan Lifshatz.
Yeah.
And so we're all, you know, we're all kind of BSing around. They make a bunch of toasts, and the toasts were great because Tucker got up there. And obviously, Tucker has a lifetime of material on Nick Cimelli.
Sure.
Just know that certain phrases such as...
They offered the biggest ball pit in the New England.
That came up. Everyone in the room knew exactly what he was talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Cimelli-isms, ones that we haven't even heard him say before. Like, he apparently, instead of saying he wanted to piggyback off something, he used to say, I want to backpack off something. And they never stopped him. They let him continue. He wanted. He wasn't hungry on time. He said, I want to have a piece of salad. A piece of lettuce. I'll have a piece of lettuce.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, they continued. It was just an absolute ball bust. And give Tucker all the credit in the world.
He killed it.
It was merciless.
Real tough to do that in that situation be bad. He was great.
But it is the roast of Nick, which is not
True.
The... low-hanging fruit.
Sure, sure. So we're all sitting there, and it's time to bring out everybody's, you know, either chicken, fish, or steak. And so we're all waiting. They're bringing everything out, and everyone's gotten their plate. Everyone has gotten their plate except for one person.
Oh, no.
And that gentleman's name is Dan Lifschatz. And all of a sudden, the room gets quiet. Out comes the biggest goddamn tomahawk steak.
Yo, we called it. Yo, we called it. Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, yeah. Oh, that is. Oh, he hated that. Oh, did he hate that?
I have the audio here, Fred.
Oh,
here
he did not like that one bit. Because the subconscious is going, yeah, this is the greatest thing ever.
We had videographers waiting. There were people filming this.
All the cameras that come around, they were tipped off.
Oh, that is. Oh, that. I wish I would have went. Just to see how pissed off he got about this. And he can't act pissed because, like, the joke's on him and he's at a wedding. But he's furious because they're basically calling him fat. But I mean, it's basically going, hey, fat ass.
No, I was less, hey, fat ass. It was like, hey, remember when you crushed an entire one at the dinner that was paid
for? Yeah, the two don't correlate. You're right.
He was sitting there, and the camera people had slowly started gathering.
Oh, that is so
awesome. And
Lifschatz
hadn't noticed it was going on.
Yeah.
And Nick had told me ahead of time, because I wanted to be able to film it, and I'll show you the video afterwards. I have the audio from it. And it was like, there was
a face
hush.
Of someone trying to keep cool.
There was a hush in the room, and then just literally this giant plate, they bring it out.
All right.
You, Rich! You! I love you, God.
So he immediately blamed you.
F you, Rich. F you, Nick. F you. And just like yelling it at everybody, just pointing at us.
Yeah.
Oh. That is the best.
No, again, this is
the standing back there just like dancing.
Oh, yeah.
I did it.
This is the back corner of the room, and everybody is watching him.
I don't need all this.
I like how he goes, I'm going to eat this despite you all. Oh, yeah, that's why.
But with the bone, it's only 30 ounces.
I mean, Nick was like, is that the 30 or the 40? You tell me!
I just like how he reiterated it, too. He said it twice. Like, I'm going to eat this just to spite you guys.
And he did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he
sure.
Loved every second of it.
Yeah.
He inhaled it.
That's what I'm saying is that his subconscious was like, this is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But his conscious mind was going... Dan does not like to be poked fun at. That is something, if you could take one look at his Twitter.
What's awesome is that at one point, the father of the bride was doing his toast, and the first thing, when he was reading his thing, and he goes, I want to welcome our great, and he points at Nick and goes, Mark Cimelli to the family, and the whole place goes, ooh, and Nick just goes, and he goes, I'm sorry, I meant Nick Cimelli.
Ah.
Wasn't a joke either. He
wasn't
just
a
did
joke.
That. Yeah.
And the place just all started dying laughing.
Oh boy, poor Nicholas.
Oh, but
always in the shadow.
Mark was the best. He was just.
I sleep on a recliner.
He was totally in his element.
He was on fire.
It was great. Like the next morning, he like went over because there was a big breakfast for everyone. It was again, they spared no expense.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they told us we could bring our two kids that we'd brought. They didn't go to the reception, but they came with us. And he goes, "Hey, it's your Uncle Mark, kids. How you doing, boys? We gonna go fishing? What do you say? I'll make you sandwiches."
Rich's kids' faces. I wish I had a photo of that.
They thought they had met a rock star. And so,
well,
like,
they had.
So he ends up leaving, and my son was like, boy, it sure would be great to have a dad like Mark Cimelli. And I'm like, cops. Well, I'm your dad. Like, what are you talking? And Mary then later on is like, you know, he was saying that he was praying the rosary at one point for like good weather. You should call your mom because she's into guys who pray the rosary. Like, why does everyone
I'm gonna
want
Mark- pay your mom?
Why does everyone want Mark to basically be the father figure to our kids?
I was doing the rosary just to let you know I'm gonna bang your mom. Upside down pineapple lady.
She is down with that, apparently.
You know what? Rich's mom's all Catholic. I'm going to stop playing with this thing. Playing with his rosary. Give us the signals.
It's like the biggest aphrodisiac for my mom. You tell her that, like, oh, they pray the rosary.
Yeah, I know how to work it, honey. I got the rosary.
Well, that is...
But it was great.
I feel very bad that I was not able to go, but it sounds like everyone had a great time. That is so great that they did that with the tomahawk.
It was awesome. It was awesome. And they thought of everything. It truly was. It was a great wedding. And the open bar, Fred. So I mean, it was open bar. They had a donut. They had a wall of donuts. Yeah. Cane's donuts. Where you just went up. They were on these like sticks, and you just would go and grab like all you'd eat like Cane's donuts, which was insane. So yeah, it was great. We had a good time.
Did the only wedding I've been at without an open bar was Chris Rucker's.
Well, that was the other thing too. Is that this was also kind of like for a lot of people, the first big event that we had all been to since all that. So, I mean, people threw down. It was awesome.
Things got real messy after you guys left.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't many people left, but I guess.
No, there was like lap dances going on and everything.
Whoa. We stayed pretty late. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, it's a shame I missed it, but congratulations to Nick and his bride.
It was awesome.
They are on a plane right now to Turks and Caicos. So if you see them, get them a tomahawk steak.
F you.
I just, that wedding, it was awesome.
I'm going to eat all of this.
If I said F you out loud at a wedding, my wife would go insane.
What are you doing in front of the family?
All right. John Morosi of the MLB Network is going to join us as the Astros and Red Sox tied at 1. First pitch at 8:08 tonight. We will have that for you in just a moment.
98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos. Tucker and Rich.
That's got to be a soul-killing exercise.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hits it in the air to right. Back at the wall. It's gone. Grand slam, J.D. Martinez. That is hit down the line. It is gone for a grand slam. Second of the game for the Red Sox, and they lead 8-0 here in game 2.
It's not an easy decision. Oh, we're going with Eddie. There's a lot of thought process. We decided this morning that this is the route we're going to take. I think overall going to 3-4-5, we're healthy, we're rested. We do believe we're in a great spot pitching-wise.
.5 Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. John Morosi of the MLB Network. As your Red Sox tied 1-1, now with home field advantage, next 3 at Fenway Park, it's going to be chilly the next 2 nights.
What are they saying this evening? Because I know
40.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, it should be 40 this time of year. It's just it's been unseasonably nice.
Yeah, well, all of a sudden, your global warming, so much for that. John Morosi from the MLB Network joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Morosi, hello, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great to be back in Boston. Can't wait to be over at Fenway today. And yes, I feel like we're back to fall weather for postseason baseball at Fenway. It doesn't get better than that.
All right, so what time will you get to the park today?
So that's a great question. So, as you know, we're doing MLB Central live from Fenway beginning at 10 o'clock. So I'm heading over there in a little bit, and then I'll be there all day, which will be great.
Jesus, so you're going to be there for like 15 hours?
Yeah, he's going to be there till 1 in the morning. Yeah.
I will be. That's right. So it'll be one of my longer working days of the year, but I love it. This is why, you know, when I fell in love with broadcasting and journalism when I was a college student here in Boston, this is what I envisioned wanting to do. If you told me when I was 19 that I could spend all day at Fenway on the day of a ALCS game 3, I would have said, sign me up, and that's exactly how I feel right now.
Well, congratulations. At least you have a luxury ballpark to hang out in with plenty of suites and
all the amenities.
Just have a seat down the right field line and watch the bullpen. Be good for you.
That's right. It's all we need, my friends. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I tell you what, the first playoff game I covered at Fenway was game 3 of the ALCS in 2004. And then, of course, I came back and covered the most recent round against the Rays. And I got to tell you, I certainly this is the most engaged that I can recall
yes.
the Fenway crowd
yeah.
being
yeah, yeah.
since that 2004 postseason. There's a lot of reasons, maybe. I think we're all just glad to be back at the ballpark and watching postseason baseball together again. But I tell you what, I mean, they were hanging on every single pitch. I mean, I just felt that emotional investment. It was a pretty incredible experience to be there.
Yeah, and I think especially with the, you know, the unknown with the Patriots, and you know, this isn't, they're just not walking to a championship, and the unexpected nature of this run.
It's also the way they're winning, like in dramatic fashion.
Right, and no one thought, and no one should have thought that this team was going to be in this position right now. I mean, if you look up and down their lineup, and especially if you look at their pitching, I mean, I mean, certainly, John, there was no way you thought they were going to be in this situation.
Correct. No, this was not the team I picked to be here when the season began.
Right.
And I think a couple things stand out to me. I think Alex Cora is an excellent manager. I think he really knows, especially in the playoffs. You know, he's had a lot of diverse experiences, obviously, in life and in baseball. And I really think that he does a great job of making sure that the entire roster is prepared and mentally invested every single game. And I love that spikes on mentality for the rotation, where if the next day is not your start date, even sometimes when it is, your spikes are on and you're ready if we need you. And I think it's a great mentality and ethic to have for your team throughout the course of October. You obviously can't do 6 months of a regular season that way, but for 1 month, for tournament baseball, you can do it. And I think he really understands how to seize moments in a playoff run. And I think on the offensive side of things, Schwarber coming in at the trade deadline has brought something very unique. And then Kike, the way he's playing right now, it's really – I mean, I've been covering the playoffs for a lot of years, guys. We've all been watching a lot of playoff baseball. There's not many times that I've seen a player as hot as Kike. I mean, this is historic what he's doing. And you could just tell he's doing a very good job with his experience from the Dodgers of being very much in the moment. And both sides of the ball, great catch in center field. I see him wearing number 5, and I flash back 20 years to when Nomar was winning batting titles wearing that jersey. It's pretty cool to watch him right now.
Yeah, and how often have you seen that in a postseason for a team as a guy who's not, you know, one of the bigger players, like a Freeze for the Cardinals or someone like that, just take off and how much that can mean to a team. Just a guy that gets hot at the right time.
Well, I think Freeze comes to mind, and Daniel Murphy in the 2015 playoffs with the Mets. And obviously he was a pretty established star at that point.
Rosarena last year.
Oh, Rosarena is another good name. Yes, yeah. Similar. But I think the thing about Kike is it's the totality of what he's doing. It's the, of course, he sets the record for the most total bases in a 5-game span in the playoffs. So it's never happened before in terms of that consistency. And with the Rosarena, it was certainly a lot of home runs. But with Kike, it's everything. It's home runs, yes. It's also key hits. It's also a key, you know, game-winning sac fly to clinch the last series. And even in game one, like 3 incredible plays in center field. The first one, of course, coming in was incredible. But he's made a lot of remarkable reads. And let's remember, he's naturally an infielder. And look at what he's doing in center field. So I think you line it all up. And Alex, of course, knows Kike very well. I think one of the points that I've talked about here in the playoffs that really stands out to me is, so Alex met Kike when Kike was 8 years old. And Kike's father, Enrique, was one of the coaches on Alex's winter ball team in Caguas, Puerto Rico. So he has known Kike since Kike was like in second grade. And that's a relationship that, I think you see that comfort that each has with the other, and it really stands out, I think, in the way Kike is playing right now.
What is your opinion about starting pitchers only going two or three innings? And you mentioned how Alex Cora will pitch anyone at any given time, and you're going to see it tonight. You know, Pivetta, if he doesn't pitch tonight, is going to start game four tomorrow night, and 5 years ago that was unheard of. What do you think about managers? And it's not just Corey. You saw Urias pitch the eighth inning last night for the Dodgers out of nowhere. So what is your opinion about how managers handle their staffs in the playoffs now as opposed to 5 years ago?
Well, the game has certainly changed. I love the romance of the – we all grew up, obviously, in different eras of the game with these great matchups. And certainly I grew up in Michigan, so I think about the Smoltz and Morris game from 1991 and watching two people that were connected to – to my state in that game and see how they were going at it for 9-10 innings. And it just I think that the rhythm of the game a little bit of that is lost, unfortunately. But I also understand that you're seeing just maximum effort and maximum quality of pitches throughout the entire game. It's a different way of watching the game and appreciating it, and you think about the strategy another level. And I also think it's important to go that second step in looking at it and say, this is the manager making this decision often in concert with the front office. Because the front office has said, we like, for example, last night with the Dodgers, we like Urias against this part of the lineup, this stage of the game. This is his normal throw day, so we're going to have him available here for this stretch. And we like him better than any other lefty we have in that spot. I thought it was also interesting, as we were just doing our on-field segments after game two in Houston, what was going on behind me was you could look in the bullpen monitor and Pivetta was throwing his bullpen after the game was over because he had purposely not thrown the bullpen during game two or before it so he could be available. It's a different way of doing things. Front offices are heavily involved. Your training staff's heavily involved. And managers now look at it and say, hey, if this is my best option for the eighth inning, on my team, he's going to pitch.
So let's say that Pivetta ends up pitching tonight. Like, there is a situation where, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez gets scared off early. Who do you see pitching in game four, starting?
That's an excellent question. I think Sale, I don't think he comes back on short rest like that. It's possible, although certainly it's possible on the Houston side that their game one starter might start game four, potentially, depending on how things play out for them. Do you go with an opener with one of your bulk guys in the bullpen? I think that they're going to do everything they can to not have Pivetta go because I really don't believe Sale is their choice there. I think one of the things that Alex said to sort of tip things a little bit was he said he did not want to have lefties going back to back days, which would have meant Pivetta 3, Rodriguez 4, and potentially Sale 5. So basically, I think he's already indicating he's got Sale targeted for game five. It would be, I think, if it's not Pivetta in game four, it's going to be an opener. So choose a reliever, and that reliever is going to probably
pitch. If Hauk doesn't go tonight, Hauk, it would be him.
Hauk is probably the guy.
But, John, this is where the seven-game series, I think, becomes a disadvantage for the Red Sox. Listen, if their offense keeps this up, I mean, it obviously doesn't matter. I mean, I probably think they hit maybe a couple grand slams tonight. I'm not positive if they can keep that up. But over the course of a seven-game series, do you suspect that, you know, the lack of starting pitching, the lack of depth in the bullpen is going to come into play certainly a lot more than when you take care of business in four against Tampa Bay?
Well, here's the thing, I would say this: if I was on the radio in Houston right now, they would be more concerned about their pitching depth than you are about the Red Sox pitching depth.
Oh,
because 100%, Houston right now. Let's think about it. So Luis Garcia gets only three outs in game two, has a knee problem. Framber Valdez went 2 2/3 in game one, and they may have to bring Framber back in game four tomorrow because Odorizzi had to pitch in game two. And their best pitcher, Lance McCullers, is out.
Right.
And if you look at their roster overall, Greinke is not stretched out enough to start a game. Maybe he can start and pitch two innings, but he's not. You see the name Zach Greinke. His current form is not the potential Hall of Famer form of a normal Zach Greinke.
Sure.
And you know, you look even deeper. Verlander hasn't pitched this year. So their group has been decimated by injuries and short starts. And this is where I don't think any starting pitcher on their roster, not named Lance McCullers Jr., has pitched beyond the third or fourth inning this entire postseason. And so now Urquidy is a wild card of sorts because he didn't pitch in the first round. He's plenty rested. He's not the biggest name, but remember, he pitched a very good game in the World Series 2 years ago. His career in the playoffs, he's got a 2.81 ERA in like eight outings. He's not a huge name, but he's the guy that gets it done in the playoffs. And so that's what this is, a bit of a dangerous game for the Sox. Like if he settles in, he's impervious to the playoff pressure from what we've seen in the past. Now, who knows what happens tonight, but that's been his track record. So they're pinning a lot on Urquidy. If Urquidy does not go deep into this game today, Houston is in serious trouble because their game four options are Greinke as an opener or Framber Valdez after Framber only went 2 2/3 in game one. Their options are not as strong as the Red Sox options.
Well, very interesting. A pivotal game three mm-hmm. tonight. John Morosi will be at Fenway Park for 16 hours today.
Be there in about an hour. Go say
it.
Hi.
I love it. I can't wait. I was dreaming of this when I was in college, guys. So this is, for me, I'm going to have a lot of fun. It's probably like my favorite place. If I had to be anywhere for 16 hours in a day, it would be Fenway.
You're gonna meet a guy named Dan Roach today. You guys will have a lot in common. Yeah. You'll be able to. You'll hit it off.
It's
awesome.
I think John has.
I know Dan very well. We go back many years. So he's a great guy.
Yeah, he's the best.
Where are you from in Michigan?
So I grew up in a town called Essexville, which is 1 square mile. Beautiful place there by Bay City.
Oh.
And then I came out here for school, and then I went back to. I live in Ann Arbor right now.
Oh, all right. I'm from Farmington Hills. How do you like that? All right.
Oh, really?
I am. What?
We go back and forth on wonderful Detroit the suburbs all day long, and we'll do that. When we next talk, we'll talk about the finer points of living in Michigan.
Farmington Hills is really a jewel. All right, John Morosi, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I could buy the house I grew up in for $5. John Morosi, thank you so much for the time, sir.
Thanks so much, guys. All the best. Have a great day. Thank you,
John. The same. I got to ask. Say you're from Michigan, I got
to
ask.
What was the name of the suburb that I played with when you came to see show?
That was outside of Mount Clemens.
Mount Clemens.
Okay, it was Mount Clemens. That's where Kid Rock's from, 36 Mile, from the mean streets of 36 miles from Detroit.
Tell you what, they love Vince Neil in Mount Clemens.
They loved metal in Mount Clemens.
Yes,
they loved Millersdale in Mount Clemens.
That night they did. Thank you.
They did. John Morosi, there you go. I wouldn't mind being at Fenway for that long. Today.
Oh, I would love to go to one of these games.
Not 3 days in a row.
Wednesday's an afternoon game, Fred. 5 o'clock, if I read that correctly.
I am going to the Patriot game on Sunday. That is about as much activity as I can take.
Sure. Has anybody contacted you about getting to their tailgate?
Yes. But I will reemphasize that later because I do want to do it. I do want to take them.
Because there are some of those monster tailgates you see now where people bring like lobster.
Yeah,
which is insane, where they basically bring up a whole like chef's setup and they cook all day.
My sons and I are butting heads about the Jets jersey. He's got to get with the program.
Oh, it's not the what kind of Jets jersey. It's putting it on in general.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't like the Patriots or anything, but he
doesn't want to get razzed. You know, tell him they don't really razz at Gillette Stadium.
If you wear the Mo Lewis, you're going to be fine.
No, but I'm not worried about it. He's in eighth grade, and you know what kids in middle school are? Total pricks. I mean, is there an age of more pricks?
I'm right in the
seventh
thick of
and
it.
Eighth, seventh and eighth grade
oh,
is
man.
The worst.
I mean, some of these things that these kids say.
Yeah.
Not my kid, at least around me, and according to the school, is a very sweet kid. I think sometimes for his own too sweet for his own good, but like. I mean, some of these things that these kids say, I'm just like, this is, what are you, a psychopath?
Apparently, Fred, though, we right now have it good because apparently the girls are 10 times worse.
Well.
Like 10 times worse.
Oh, yeah. Because they care more, too.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll just get my wife started on that. Her middle school was a torture chamber. and she's good looking, I can only imagine. I'll tell you this. I mean, I was a total dick in middle school, and it was by matter of survival. I mean, it was the only way to survive. Trying to work my way through the jungle. But yeah, you know how it is. These kids are so mean to each other. I mean, they say things that are just outrageous. Like, I mean, what are you doing? And so, you know, anything that sets him apart from anyone else, he's like, you know, I don't know. I'm like, ah, come on, it'll be funny. But we'll see. All right, here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Talking about the game is no game.
You are listening. You are enjoying the talk.
Toucher and Rich.
That's wordplay, my friend.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jones fires down the middle for Bourne. Makes the catch. Goodbye. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10. Touchdown, Patriots.
Holy crap. What a throw on the skinny to the left side. And the safety overplays it. He makes up for the mistake off the deflection and a massive touchdown to take the lead with 2:11 left.
Too much time. Too much time.
All they had to do was make one stop.
They weren't.
On 3rd and 25.
You know what? How can you make a stop when your defense is gassed for being on the field for, what, a full 10 minutes more?
Well, hey, according to Tony Romo, the receivers were gassed of the of the Cowboys. Again, if you're just joining us, Tony Romo's got something wrong with him. Tony Romo is I don't care. If you disagree with me, I got no time for you. That guy stinks. And Rich hit the nail on the head in his take, because it jibes with mine, is that he's just so full of hubris now. Like, he just thinks he's a star.
I think that he just got a big head, and he's smelling his own farts now and thinks that he doesn't have to prepare, and he can just wing it.
He's loose all over the place. He doesn't know what's going on.
Because even when he was annoying you with the, he was never like this, where it just seemed like he didn't know what was going on.
He doesn't know what's going on. I don't know if he's wasted up in the booth. I don't know what the hell is going on, but he's all over the place. He doesn't have an idea what's going on. He was driving me nuts. Driving me nuts during that game. Nance makes a good point that big special team star of the game. He made a big play in defense. Bethel might have influenced the way a kick went, because you don't think that. You think a hand gets up and you think unless they touch the ball, like,
it's go.
At least me. He goes, oh, maybe that influenced, you got to think that influenced the kick. And then he's like, who ran him down, Uche? What? Like, what? So now you're just talking about whatever play comes into your head, you smug prick. He blows, and he blows in a way that drives me nuts, that he thinks he's something else.
Well, the good news is,
have self-hatred, you prick.
This is probably the last time I'll be calling a Patriots game this season, I would think.
God bless, because if that's the A team, I want nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Give me that Sunday night team. Give me Eagle.
Oh, Iron Eagle's great. Yeah.
Jesus, give me Chris Myers, who's every Lions
game.
We're
going to get Andrew Catalan. We'll get, good. Whatever.
Good. Good. Yeah. I don't need Romo anywhere. None. Apparently, the guy from NBC Sports Boston that we have on.
Phil Perry?
Yeah, Phil Perry was on the pregame show, and he was saying how that when, like, Romo showed up, like, there was a group of Cowboy fans, like, waiting for him to show up in the booth, and, like, he got this big round of applause. Like, I see him sashaying in there. He blows. Get him out. Get him out. Dan, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was saying, when he signed his, like, $180 million contract or whatever, and they had an interview with him on, like, CBS, it was, like, one of the shows, and they're talking, asking him a bunch of questions. And then they get to the contract, which is like what the interview was about. And he just was like, yeah, I'm just really blessed. Like, I don't want to talk about that. That's like personal, you know, like really just kind of like too cool for school in a really kind of like schmaltzy way. And I was like, uh-oh, Romo's going to be awful. Like all the, and it's been true. He's just like so cool for school.
And the idea that CBS gave him, like, you have the product. You have it. You have the product. The product is the NFL. The product is not Tony Romo. See, they all get caught up on Monday Night Football became a phenomenon, and it became a phenomenon because of the broadcasters that they had in the booth. But that was the NFL in the 70s, like when they had something to prove. You know, you're fighting against every sports in prime time. That was when they tape delayed NBA Finals games. Like, you are an idiot. You're going to have sports in prime time. You're going to get killed. And then they happen to hit upon this trio of guys that by their rubbing each other the wrong way in the disparate personalities that they hit on gold. And now they think that they need the big shots to call these games. Maybe Monday Night Football now with the Manning cast, that's a good idea because that's a throwaway game on a night that, you know, maybe people aren't that interested in it. But you have the big game on Sunday, and you could put any clown in there. The idea that they paid him any money is ludicrous. If I was CBS, I'd go, give me a kid that's hungry. I'll give him the money. And what do we get? Lose ratings? Yes.
I was just looking at how much money Tony Romo actually gets paid.
It's like 20 a year, right?
It's 10 years, $180 million.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
And that, keep in mind, his contract with Dallas was like 6 years and 110. He's actually making as much now as he did when he was actually getting hit.
It just seems like something's going on. Because, as I said, even when he was annoying with his little sounds that he would make, he at least seemed like he was paying attention to the game. And now, from the clips that I'm hearing this morning, because I got to be honest, I listened to the first half of it, or the first three quarters pretty much, and it was Zolak and Sosie. And it was only the fourth quarter. And there, now that I'm hearing this stuff, it doesn't sound like he's even paying attention.
No, he was paying no attention. Anytime there was anything with the rules, he would call for the Savistor.
Sterator,
whatever the hell his name is, to come in there. Screw him. And so, what a mistake to give him that money.
Someone was saying, Romo was saying Jonnu Smith got tackled by his hair, not horse collar. What hair does Jonnu Smith even have?
Oh, you missed that. Mm-hmm. So there was a big thing about the penalty. First of all, he's got no idea what's going on. It was an obvious horse collar, and I knew it, and John knew it, and anyone watching the game knew it. And he goes, I think you're allowed to pull him by their hair. The guy's got no hair. The guy that got horse collar's got no hair. He got his shaved head. He's got doesn't have long hair. Oh, he was I could have ridden him down, but I just choose to rant. I mean, I could go case by case of all the things that he did wrong, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
You all watched it. You all saw. He stinks. All right, Bob Sosie did a good job. We'll talk to him in just a moment.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.